Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This podcast is going to be the second part in my week at working at the Magic Castle in Hollywood. And on this day, I went over to visit Brent Garris, who's the proprietor of the Magic Apple in Studio City, California. While there, a couple of interesting people stopped in, so I got a chance to chat then with these gentlemen, and I think you will enjoy hearing their thoughts also. Jason Latimer has been away from the magic scene for a little bit, and he explains why and what he's been doing and what his future holds. Also, Jonathan Levitt came in, and we talked a little bit about his experience out here in Hollywood since he moved here from Denver and getting into the movies and as an actor and a consultant. So, I hope that you enjoy this part two from My Week at the Magic Castle. Hello, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we have finished lunch and just dropped off Raphael because he had to work on some stuff for his lecture, the tour he's going to be having coming up, but I had some time to drive the short distance over to Studio City to the Magic Apple. I'm here with Brent Garris. Hi there, Brent.
Hi there. How you doing? Thank you for listening, coming, hanging out.
Whatever. Exactly. Whatever. And I wanted just to chat with you a little bit. I wanted to see the shop. I've never seen the shop, and I'm from what I've seen, I'm kind of impressed. So right in here is where you host lectures. And let me kind of follow this little area over here.
Somebody just practicing his magic. But, there's books. We have illusions for rent in the other room here, and we do lectures, a little stage area here.
Right.
That's it. We rent these illusions.
You got lights and everything,
for
too?
TV. Yeah, lights. And usually the TV people want to rent those things, not so much magicians. But
I hadn't thought about that, but I guess that's right, like for commercials and things.
Commercials, and Ellen's rented a few things. And
mm-hmm. Ellen DeGeneres?
Her people. I mean, not her.
Yeah, yeah. Has she been in?
She has not.
Okay.
But Conan O'Brien did a thing here a couple of years ago for the Tonight Show. That was fun. And They filmed it here. He was
That's
on the
cool.
Tonight Show. Yeah, it was
okay.
Cool. And it's on YouTube, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of TV. You know, America's Got Talent. There's a TV show called Wizard Wars.
Rick Lax is just starting up.
Yeah, Penn and Teller are part of. So, mm-hmm. Although they haven't been in there, the company was shopping here for flash paper and such.
Well, Rick's in Las Vegas, but they're filming here in Los Angeles?
Uh-huh. Well, they just filmed last Thursday and Friday.
I just saw that on Facebook, that Rick had posted a few things.
Okay, is he a contestant?
He's not. No, he's the one who produced the whole thing and put the whole show together and pitched it, I guess, and
gotcha.
Went on. I've been trying to get together with him for a podcast on this, and he was going to do it a while back, and then it got postponed. It was supposed to start at a certain time, and then they said, the producers on Sci-Fi, I guess, pushed it back to a later date, and he said, we'll chat again later, and so now they've been filming, and so I'm going to try and catch him later.
Yeah, it's here. It's over the hill somewhere. So they bought a bunch of stuff here, and I guess there's like a magic shop that the contestants can go shop in
during
the show.
Sure. Uh-huh.
So they came and bought a bunch of flash paper and silks and very typical feather flowers and things like that, very typical magic-y stuff.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Well, how long have you been in business here?
We've been here 10 years.
Okay. Were you someplace else before?
Nope.
This is your first venture?
This is it.
Is where am I getting $1 million?
Here's a dumb idea. Let me open a magic shop. 3 blocks from another magic shop.
Why is it with so many other magic shops exactly that you wanted to do this? Just thought it was a...
Well, there wasn't. There was only two others in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
There's now none anywhere near here. There is one in Disneyland. There's a shop in...
It's really more of a tourist shop.
Yeah, it's not really competition at all. There's one in Anaheim and then further down in Temecula. Mm-hmm. But it's so far that this is the only one in the valley, and you have to drive an hour and a half maybe to get the next one.
Hmm. The other one was Hollywood Magic.
Yeah, they closed down a few years ago. Three or four years ago, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're so close to the castle, we have guys come in from the castle to lecture or just to hang out or like him, just kind of practice and stuff. And it's good. Obviously, there's good days and bad days, but for 10 years, it's been good, and I've met amazing people and had a lot of fun, and it's cool.
Well, you're in a good location, certainly. I mean, it's kind of like, I guess, Las Vegas, that every magician who is will eventually come through.
Yes, I mean, being so close to the castle is great, and I feel like a lot of people that come here and our friends say good things about the store, so that's always nice. There's plenty of parking, which is always good.
That's good. Yeah, because I've been around a few other strip malls, and they have no parking whatsoever. They got like 12 slots for 15 stores. It's crazy.
Right, exactly.
So this is easy to find right off of Highway 101 over here, Ventura Highway.
Ventura and Tahunga, it's easy to do.
Yeah. And they can find you online.
Yep. We have the website, themagicapple.com. That's where we post a lot of our... we have wacky hours. Sometimes they change pretty frequently.
I was lucky to catch you today. I wasn't sure if you're going to be open either.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are closed Mondays. We always will be closed Mondays. But yeah, themagicapple.com. We have stuff about the lectures, like Kevin James lectures coming. Mm-hmm. Two guys from Canada are coming in summer called Tyler Wilson and Chris Mayhew. They're very funny guys.
I know them very well.
The A-Team. So they're coming September. Or, sorry, summer.
Mm-hmm.
And, it'll be fun. It'll be good.
And do you, I send lectures your way, frequently over there.
Yeah.
And, I know some guys, like myself and others, like Raphael, will be lecturing at the castle. And so you wouldn't book somebody, obviously, that's just going to be.
Yeah, some guys
are
too close because, one, it's free for the castle members to go to the lectures.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a conflict there. And it's so close. Sometimes if it's a big enough name or I know that they have enough material, we'll book them twice. Or we'll do a workshop here, like a small 8 or 10 person workshop.
Yeah.
That's a little bit more expensive and a little more exclusive and maybe for the more pros.
Right.
Whereas the lectures are kind of, like for this Kevin James, anybody who likes magic will get something out of
it. Sure, Kevin is an inventive guy, very creative guy.
So, yeah, if it's too close, we won't do it.
Yeah, I've got Charles Galshi, for an example, coming from Australia. And he's going to be doing a workshop, if you're interested, as well as a lecture. And he's a mentalist and has been around a while and has a book out, A Lifetime in Magic.
Right,
and,
he does have a book.
Got some very good stuff. And so, anyhow, so you have fairly regular lectures, I guess.
Yeah, we try to do them once a month, lectures or workshops once a month.
Yeah.
Obviously, these in the walls on the walls here are plenty of people. Giobi and Josh J has been here. Actually, Josh was just here about 2 months ago and was fantastic. But Max Maven's been, Tony Clark lectures, and I think we've had them, all the big guys.
but
we're definitely welcome to more some of these up and coming guys or obviously repeats.
Now, how far away do you draw clients?
Do have Bakersfield. I have customers that come down from Bakersfield,
which is from most people's.
Yeah, like 90 miles probably north of here.
Yeah. 2 hour drive or so.
Yeah, somebody actually this morning was here from Chino Hills, which he said was an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But for the lectures, they're usually during the week, so it's kind of a pain in the neck for traffic.
To get down
traffic,
and back,
but people plan on it or they leave work early, so distance is not an issue for some of these guys.
You consider weekends?
We've done some on Sundays. Sometimes they're Sundays. It just really works with the lecturers.
Sure.
If they're working at the castle,
right.
Sundays are okay. Sundays more, we close at 5, so we can start it at 5.
Right,
so.
Yeah.
But
good.
Yeah, they come from all over. It's pretty crazy how many people come.
Now, as far as magic shops go, I did a podcast a while back on brick-and-mortar shops, and I had talked with different people. I talked with Steve Lancaster, who owns a shop in Tulsa, and I talked with Denny Haney, with Denny Lee, and then also with Emery Williams, with Williams Magic out of Tucson. And each of those guys had different philosophies and whatnot and about kind of where the future is going. And just kind of, since you have an online presence as well, I assume, which is pretty successful and does more than just supplement your income. I mean,
right.
when people don't walk in, at least you have other things that are coming in online.
Yeah.
What do you think as far as the future? You mentioned that you're the only shop kind of within a couple hours around. I mean, do you see a demise? Do you mean, does this look like a workable plan that somebody should consider getting into, buying a brick and mortar?
No, don't ever open up a magic store just because I want any more competition. Everything is online now, and you can download almost everything. And some of the big magic distributors, offer downloads and also offer the product. My customers, and I feel like a lot of people that come in, like to actually have a tangible thing, like an easy-to-master Card Miracles by Amarth. You can download it right now and have it in your bedroom right now. But a lot of people, I think, like to have the actual product in their hand.
Yeah.
It feels like they've paid for it, and it's a tangible thing. So
yeah. It's like going to the library versus getting a download PDF.
Getting it online, you have to sit in front of your computer for the most part, or iPad. It's, I don't know. I prefer to watch it on a TV. I think books, there's less and less books coming out, but I have a pretty big book selection in there, so I like books.
That's interesting you mention that, because I thought the same thing, and I don't know if it was just me, but you're the first one who said what's in my mind. It seems that there are fewer books being published.
Yeah, I mean, nobody really buys a lot of books. Nobody under, probably 30 will buy a book, unless they're really recommended, or like the Royal Road, or Expert Card Table.
Classic, something.
Mm-hmm. Expert Card Table. Those everybody should have, whether you read them or not, you should just have them if you like those magic tricks. I think magic, it's coming out too fast. As an art, it's not very good, but as a business, it's fine because literally three times a week I have UPS coming delivering boxes of...
You were just opening a box
every,
just as I came?
Yeah. Whether it's something new... I mean, this is flash paper that I carry, but whether it's something brand new from some guy we've never heard of with a one-trick DVD... Mm-hmm. Or some like a Mike Lammer or a Daryl or, you know, Tony Clark coming out with something new, which is great, but it's definitely, there is too much magic coming out. It's too much to handle, and some of these magic suppliers, distributors, are buying too much of it.
But don't you think the most people who are coming into a magic shop say, what have you got, what's new? They don't want to say what's old, I need,
right, they
you know, scotch and soda.
But they also don't know what color Monty is or a Svengali deck.
So you can show them scotch and soda, hey, this is brand new, I just got this in.
Yeah, exactly. There's everybody asks... Yeah. Hey, what's new every week? And but they don't know what, like you said, a scotch and soda, or can do the paddle move,
mm-hmm.
or know how to do a double lift. That's
you teach them these things. I mean,
yeah, I don't in the store. No, we do offer classes here for ages 9 and up. A lot of adults usually have been coming. It's actually split. We only offer it's only for 10 people. So like 10 adults or 5 adults and 5 kids. We do offer them there on Sundays and Saturdays.
But is it a series, like 6 weeks or something?
Yeah, 4 weeks in a row, 4 one-hour classes.
How much?
$100.
Okay.
And it includes a deck of cards and whatever things we go over,
mm-hmm.
a paddle move or a color-changing card or an opposite-color deck, you know, includes all that stuff.
Yeah.
But if someone buys something, no, I don't teach them in the store. We have a sign here. If you can read this sign, you can read instructions, go practice. Nobody practices anymore. They're too quick to...
I got to take a picture. That's great.
There's 4 of them in the store. 4 of that sign. Everybody's too quick to pick up the next trick, and if it's not... That's why these self-working DVDs are blowing up. Everybody's making self-working DVDs.
Sure.
Although they're great.
Sure.
Big Blind Media has 3 volumes of great self-working card tricks because everybody's lazy and... They're good tricks. I don't want to take anything away from the magic tricks. They're fantastic, but... 10 years ago, there was no such thing as self-working card tricks. There was maybe some easier ones.
Yeah, there's a pack of tricks and things. You'll color Monty and whatnot.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's still not self-working. Well, they're good. This podcast could turn into a 3-hour podcast with guys that just want the newest, quickest, fastest, can I do it tonight magic trick.
I don't believe there is anything truly self-working. If it's self-working, I tell you, Brent, I would go in, I'd wind it up, I'd leave, come back and pick up my check and then get the tricks.
Exactly.
You know, but some things are almost that easy.
Yeah, some of them are, but, you know, I think every single magic trick, whether it's the ball and vase or hot rod or color, needs to be practiced, I think, for hours. Really, it sounds crazy. I think you need to practice maybe an hour per self-working trick. I mean, I don't know. Everybody learns at a different level, but... Don't be so quick to buy the newest thing. Buy, you know, the Royal Road and look at the back because there's amazing tricks in there.
You know, I learned a Bible lesson from, who's the guy who invented Matrix?
No,
I'm trying to think of the fella. Who invented Matrix? Or at least came out with the, he is on the tip of my tongue. It'll come to me in just a minute. Al Snyder, that's his name. Anyhow, I had taken a class from Al back in 1978, and it was a workshop, and he, you know, had, okay, here are the things we can work on, but we're going to practice. And you had a little checklist, and like for putting a coin in your hand, you know, it's like not a false transfer. I mean, you would literally put it in there so you know what the feel is like, you know, the weight, the temperature of the coin, et cetera. So we had to practice these things over and over, and each time you did it, you would actually check it off. So this way that you knew what you were doing, and you learned how to practice. I mean, physically by, you know, checking off each time, and then you would practice the same slide as if that you had put it in, so it should have the same feel and the same look and be natural.
Right, right.
They do that the equal number of times, too. So I think it's important that people are going to be able to learn how to practice. And so when you're saying also about having instructions, the reason you put these instruction signs to read instructions, you said every day. You know, I've heard this from several leaders.
Yeah,
that they
every
say,
day. I need, if I buy this, will you show me how it works? So I'm more of a visual learner. I have trouble reading. I don't give a... go learn. That's how we all learned. If you're over 35, you had to, or 30 even, you had to go home to bring out the instructions and read them. Now it's a little easier with the DVDs, but even sometimes people will ask me to show them how the trick is done when it comes with a DVD. Like, I don't really have time, and I'm like, well, I don't have, if you don't have time to practice, like, you don't have time for magic, get out of the big game.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, is too quick to say, I've got a show in 4 days and I want a new stand-up funny rope routine with no ropes and a mentalism but with no cards. Has to be easy. Do you guys have that? And it drives me crazy, and I can't stand it.
So. That would be enough, yeah. So there was that one time it kind of pushed you over the edge to
put these signs
up.
Right, exactly.
Very funny.
And once in a while we've got quotes. Like there's a quote here from Vernon that says, in magic today, as always, the effect is what counts. The methods or method used are purely secondary. So it doesn't really matter, I think. Does it come with a gimmick? Is there a gimmick? It matters how you perform it. Just don't suck in magic.
Yeah. Yeah, good advice. In fact, as I wrap up over here, what would be your, what's important to you? I mean, whenever that I like to close the magic word, I want to know, what is your magic word? I mean, what is it that is your motto you live by? What's
really
important?
Just practice, like care, or care about the art. Don't worry about buying. Just as something fools you doesn't mean you need to have it in your act or you need to buy it at the magic store. Enjoy being fooled.
Yeah.
Because it's everybody's too quick. If I show them a trick, what, do you guys sell that? Do you guys have that? But no. No, you don't. We don't. Or I'll tell them it's in a book and they'll never buy it anyways. That's fine.
Well, do you see that a lot of times? People will come in and they'll look at it, oh, that's kind of cool. And then they'll, you know, while they're in the store,
the
scan
time.
It. And then so
or
the
they'll
internet.
Say, I was just at the Magic Castle and this guy at the bar stuck a knife through a big block of metal. And do you guys sell that?
Yeah.
And whether I do or not, I won't sell them that because all they want to know is how it's done.
Yeah.
They have no business performing it. They have no business. They really were just fooled.
Yeah.
And there's a few customers that will say, there's a trick. And they'll describe something, let's say, a spike trick. With a, and they'll describe
Magic
the trick and say, do you guys sell that? And because it's purely they want to buy that secret, fortunately, I don't need to make sales just to, it's ruining magic. So I don't always sell something. If in conversation, I'll bring it up or ask why do they want this trick. Why do you want to stick a knife through a...
How does that fit in your routine?
Yeah, they don't have a reason for that. You can't carry that. Thing's not a walk-around event. It's a three-pound piece of metal. So for $100, I'd rather not sell that trick.
Yeah, that's what I would say sometimes. In fact, when I lecture this coming Sunday, that is the power of saying no. When a client asks you and they have a certain, you have a price and they have a budget, if it doesn't fit, say no.
Doesn't work,
You know, I think it's the same thing
magic
like on a magic
deserves
show.
Deserves it. If some guys, we get a lot of calls for kids' shows. And if their first question is, what do you charge?
Always
you
first
can't
question.
Afford it. You can't afford it. Or
they're just price shopping.
Somebody else.
Yeah.
And here, it is a little more expensive if they want me or my friends here. Because
they want a quality professional.
They deserve Magic deserves it.
Yeah, I agree. So care is your word.
Care.
Thank you, Brian Karras.
All right.
Here at the Magic Apple in Studio City, California, for the Magic Word, Scotty Yao. All right, Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast, and I'm still over here at the Magic Apple, and you never know who you're going to run into. And here's Jason Latimer. Hey, Jason.
Hey, how's it going, Scott?
Good, thank you. It's good to kind of reacquaint and get caught up again. It's been a while since we last chatted way back when. I don't remember when, but you've been working some conventions from time to time, but I've not seen you at an IBM convention for a while.
No, I fell off the map for a little bit, and I got back into my roots. I've been teaching again at universities, and I've been also building...
Teaching what?
I have a lecture series called Standing Too Close to the Chalkboard, and it's about inspiring people to ask questions outside of their fields. So my background's in applied physics, but I started studying psychology and chemistry and other fields just to design better magic tricks for my own show.
Yeah,
and
like those laser bending lights.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
It turns out the answer to the physics question wasn't in physics, it was in psychology. And that sometimes you're standing too close to the chalkboard, and you need to take a couple steps back to see more answers
and see the bigger picture.
Exactly.
Yeah, kind of I'm more of a 35,000 foot kind of guy. Also, I'm not looking at the minutiae. I kind of like to look at the big picture. Sometimes,
well, I like the idea with magic because magic has that thing that scientists don't usually talk about. We talk about magic versus method versus effect. And we throw it around like it's salt and pepper. But scientists don't think that way. Scientists think A equals B. But they don't realize that you could have a lot of variables on A. As long as it equals B, we're still good. So multivariable thinking is really my way of trying to convince people.
I see where you're going with that. That's interesting, yeah.
So
it's still going to be the same. It's just you kind of think out of that box, that's overused phrase, but truly, to still have the same answer.
To have the same answer.
Huh.
Basically, get to the same effect using multiple ways of method. And I found that's useful in magic, but it's also useful in applying sciences towards a different field. Like, now, what we do is an illusion, but that doesn't mean we didn't get to equal B. So as long as, you know, I get people to think outside of the box and inspire them to ask more questions, then I feel like I'm using magic for more than just entertainment.
That's true. Well, I believe that there certainly is a lot of psychology. Well, a lot of psychology. Obviously, that's what magic is all about. Because you're messing with someone's head. Mentalism, even more so. You know?
Definitely the messing with people's head is mentalism. And so I just got really heavily into studying applied sciences more. And I gave a talk called a TEDx Wall Street talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Seeing Beyond the Illusion of Knowledge. And it's gotten great reviews.
What was it in a nutshell? Kind of.
It was about reminding people that we don't really know the answers. We're playing a game where no one gave us a rule book.
Yeah.
So the situation is, how do we know what we can rule out and what we can't? And, yeah. and your next question determines what is possible and what is not. Not what your answer is, what your next question is. Hmm. And at the end, you really find out there's proof behind the world was not shaped by its answers. It was shaped by its questions. And that next question could come from anywhere. That's why we have to inspire questions. And that's why I love being a magician.
And that's why that it's always good when people would say there are no bad questions. There's no stupid questions. You know, to keep, I think that's what brainstorming is all about. You keep asking questions. You keep 100%. Who can we push? And you know, there's so many of us that are giving lectures. You can give the same lecture again later, but it's like, I've got these improvements. You buy a book. That's not the end. You know, a magician should always continue to think. It's like, okay, well, this is a completely different thing than was in your book. Well, yeah, well, I thought beyond that. You know?
Every story should end with dot, dot, dot.
Oh, okay. To be continued.
Exactly, because we never know where the ending is, and we'll never know.
Yeah.
And that's why I got back into studying at universities, because I found out what magic can do to inspire people. So now my next step is I'm helping exhibits come over from overseas, mm-hmm. and got one over here at San Diego Science Center, at the Reuben H. Fleet Science Center.
What kind of exhibits are you
talking
about?
Called Illusions, Nothing's As It Seems. It was originally in Dublin.
Okay.
And now I'm putting in a show called Perception, See Beyond the Illusion. Just like the Illusion of Knowledge, this will be a live dome projection experience starting July 5th. It runs for 100 shows.
And so it's actually a performance. I mean, you say an exhibit. I was thinking like a museum. It's a static thing. So
that's exactly what it is. See, we have an exhibit that's static. That's Illusions, Nothing As It Seems.
Yeah.
But for a little bit more in the bonus package, you walk across the hallway and you go to the IMAX Dome Theater that we've been retrofitting. And we ripped up the first three rows. We built a little micro stage in there. And we're going to be running a show that has a multimedia component based on seeing beyond the illusion of knowledge. Basically, not taking things for face. Value.
Sure.
And then questioning it to promote questions in a science center.
And when does this begin? And how
July
long?
July 5th.
And runs through?
It runs as two segments already.
Yeah.
We're going to run July and August and part of September. And then we take a break when school starts. And we start back up when school ends,
okay.
which is November, December.
Yeah.
So, but there's a 100 shows already scheduled.
And tell me again, where is it? And where?
San Diego Reuben H. Fleet Science Center.
And is there a website where people can get information?
Reuben H. Fleet Science Center. I think it's called RHF. sciencecenter.com.
Okay.
I believe
more information on that. Now you were recently,
or you can go to my website, which once we have it changed over this month, June, it'll have everything over. Or you go to the Facebook page; that's updated very quickly.
And your website is what?
JasonLatimer.com. And then once you're at JasonLatimer.com, you can click on all the different avenues for different hubs, from Facebook to Twitter to what's happening, what's going on next.
Weren't you recently just interviewed then also on Full Circle Magic?
Yeah, I did an interview with them on a couple things, and I'd love to do another one. I just haven't been able to make it work with the schedule right now. So we had one, and then we had to cancel it, unfortunately, because we just had another taping for a series with Penn and Teller and myself and Chris.
Oh, is that the Wizard Wars?
Yeah, with Chris
Garrett.
Tell
me about that.
Great, it's great.
I've been trying to get together with Rick Lax. You know,
it's great magic. Okay. It is so much fun and such a riot to see what people come up with. I mean, everything from a rocking chair to a bottle of, a glass bottle of worms.
Okay.
Oh, and
explain the premise of the show.
And the magic is great.
Yeah.
The magic is to promote creativity. We put magicians on the spot with items that they're not used to seeing in the magic world. They can range in anything, literally anything.
Yeah.
And we give them four of them. And these magicians that compete, there's four contestants paired two and two randomly. And those compete. When they win the first round, they go against wizards, professional magicians that we've brought over from like the Magic Castle or Working Magicians Today. And the second round, we give them three items. The second round, we give them four items. Four to the wizards, same four to the contestants.
Mm-hmm.
And they battle it out again. And the winners take home $10,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, are they judged also?
They're judged by Kristen Gerhardt, Penn and Teller, and myself.
Okay. Was Gregory Wilson involved?
Gregory Wilson is one of the wizards.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember him telling me about this.
Yeah, there's four wizards, and there's four contestants, and there's also four judges.
Now, where do the contestants come from, and how does one get to be that? I mean, how are they picked?
The contestants were selected from interviews through YouTube, online, recommendations.
But they have an interest in magic. They're magicians.
Oh, they're...
Okay.
Yeah, this is
not somebody off the street.
This is a hard contest.
Okay.
But that's what pressure makes diamonds, and the creativity that came out of these guys that is just amazing. Amazing.
Wow. Okay.
There's some real foolers in there. And Penn and Teller and myself and Kristen, we looked at each other like so many times and had to stop to deliberate. first, how did that just happen?
It fooled me, yeah.
And then second, how do we compare that? How do you compare cans of worms to a rocking chair trick? But the magic's just so much fun, and it's a riot to see how people come up with things that you would never expect to see in a magic trick, and yet they flow. It's not like... Yeah. They actually use the premises. Some of them go down it like a laundry list and say, trick with this, trick with that, trick with this, trick with that. Right. Some make it like a pizza. It's all in there.
Yeah.
And it's all going to be one effect at the end. And it's,
oh, wow.
It's okay. Great, right?
Yes, right.
And the best part about it is it promotes thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
And promotes creativity. And not necessarily just promoting new magic, but that idea of using something in a way it's not supposed to be used is a great value to everyone, whether you're in magic or not.
And they're showing this in a positive light, because I've seen some things in sci-fi, like, I don't know, Nerd Wars, or, you know, people dressed up like superheroes, or it's kind of like, it's almost like they're making fun of certain elements or people who have
This show is all about fun.
Yeah.
The audience is great. The commentary is great. I mean, there's some things that we have to critique on, just because we have to go against one performer against another, but we're basing it off of the criteria of just three major points.
Yeah.
Creativity, showmanship, and deception.
Okay.
And it's really hard to be deceptive with a can of worms, but but then again, these contestants rise to the occasion, and they do it.
Yeah.
And we have to value it with what's available in the magic community versus what they could build in the time that you're given.
Right.
But it's a very short amount of time to perform, and
I understand that it was delayed or postponed for a while. Was it because they had to completely rewrite the premise, or what happened?
We filmed the pilot, and the pilot was going to air, but they decided to go to testing with it.
Yeah.
And the pilot did so well in testing that then it was a matter of, how do we find so many contestants? Because they went straight to series.
Yeah.
It didn't even air. It went to testing and did so well in testing that they decided to go straight to series. And then it was a matter of finding as many contestants as we could, plus the judges, and make the schedule work. Because when you think about it, every episode has 12 people on it.
Right.
That means...
Is it 1 hour or two, half hour?
I'm not familiar how it's going to be cut up. Okay. I would imagine it's going to be about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to... Like, when we filmed it, you have to imagine that those 12 people had to have the same available day for filming.
Right.
And that's really hard.
Well, that's true. For all the people who are professional, they're in different parts of the country.
You got four professional magicians that are judges. You got four professional magicians that are wizards. And you probably have four professional magicians that are amateurs.
Do they shoot right through? In other words, I know Penn and Teller got to get back to Vegas. So do they do like all the episodes and they cut them up? Or do they come back? Or
We did a combination of just planning out the schedule. That's why it took so long to turn around.
Oh, man, that must have been impossible.
It was very difficult. Yeah. Very, very difficult. A lot of people flew in just to tape and flew right out.
Yeah.
You know, I was one of them. Yeah. And I live here. I flew in and filmed and I flew out.
Well, so where do you've been teaching, you said, then for a while. And so this has been a passion, just kind of wanting to return to what you were doing then before kind of thing. And
I needed to really hone my background in science more than the fields that I studied in college.
Yeah.
And when I gave the 10X Wall Street talk, the TEDx talk, it really helped me rethink why I became a magician and why I think magic is one of the highest forms of science. And I've been talking at conferences, but magic conferences, and really talking about the idea of inspiring questions. I mean, that's what a science is.
Right.
And so to study something. Mm-hmm. And when you do something so jaw-dropping, so contradictory to what you think it's supposed to do, a magic trick,
right,
that you've inspired so many people around you to start asking questions, that you're... You know, and a scientist, they're asking questions and trying to solve problems. But if you do one thing that inspires everyone to start asking questions, I think that's one of the most inspiring in science as you can.
Yeah.
The idea of, I just kind of fell in love with the idea that the right question could change everything.
So is that what you were thinking about long-term, and what are you wanting to do with your life? I mean, to be a professor at the university, or are you thinking about... combining that with magic in some way? And
I'm having a blast doing this because I feel like my goal is to try to bring magic beyond entertainment, to really value and appreciate the engineering as well as the performance.
Okay.
And it's a hard task. I admit it's really difficult to make people excited about what they don't know.
Yeah.
But when you put it in perspective with like facts about how big the universe is, or facts about how things are right in front of us and we still don't understand them.
Right. Right.
Like the idea of everyone wants to know if they can fly. Mm-hmm. And everyone moves on like they need to understand that we can't. But if you walk up to any scientist and ask them, why does matter have gravity? A giant question mark comes over their face, and their eyes become glazed
over.
Yeah. Because, simply put, we don't know yet.
Right.
And because we don't know, that's exciting.
Yes.
Something we took for granted as, oh, you can't fly. But then you actually pointed out that, no, we still don't know why you can't fly. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's like, we are, but why? Yeah, and then, right. Okay, yeah, you could, it's like a child who's always asking that why, Daddy? You know,
exactly.
Why? You explain that, well, why?
Sometimes
well, why?
A child is the best scientist we're ever going to encounter.
Because everything they continue to push that question beyond.
Exactly, because when we were kids, the only thing we knew for sure is that we didn't know much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet, as we grow older, it becomes harder and harder to believe in things we don't understand.
Because we think we know it all.
Exactly.
Particularly magicians, I would
think. We fall for something known as the illusion of knowledge.
Yeah.
And we trick ourselves into feeling we know answers, so we move on.
Wow. Say that one more time.
We fall for something known as the illusion of knowledge.
Yeah.
And we trick ourselves into feeling we know the answers, so we move on. The problem is, as we get older, everyone moves on.
Yeah.
And that's the mistake. That's the enemy. That's the illusion of knowledge. The world, you know, it wasn't wrong for us to think the Earth was flat. It was simply a matter of our data being limited.
Isn't that like learning in general? I think that adults reach a certain age, it's kind of like they stop learning. They stop reading books. They
stop wondering.
Wondering. That's right.
And so not wondering like awe and amazement, but really questioning.
Mm-hmm.
When you stop asking questions, that's a problem. One of my favorite quotes is what I use in the TEDx talk. Yeah. Stephen Hawking points out the greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It's the illusion of knowledge.
Yeah.
It's when you feel like you know the answer, you move on. And when you're not willing to change your answer, that's when you've got a bigger problem.
That's true.
Albert Einstein has another favorite quote of mine. If the facts don't fit the theory, change the facts.
Yeah.
And that's really funny coming from the guy who gave us the theory of relativity. What fact did he change?
End all. Yeah,
but,
this is the end.
But the interesting thing about it is this willingness to change your answers.
Mm-hmm.
Your willingness to accept a new answer determines what's possible and what's not.
And that is for life. It's not just in knowledge, but also like a religion, you know.
It's for everything.
In questioning something that you are learning, because you're becoming more knowledgeable with the more questions you ask.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're willing to...
not to have a belief that this is end all, this is it.
Yeah, as long as you're willing to accept the answers that you have,
mm-hmm.
but not rule out the answers you don't.
Yeah.
Everything becomes magical. Everything becomes magical.
Literally, yeah.
And as long as, like, I don't mind playing by the rules of physics. My background's in applied sciences and applied physics and math. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem playing by the rules people have given me. Mm-hmm. But I almost feel like every equation...
Gravity,
every equation should end with dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
As far as we know.
Yeah.
And that's why I became a magician.
Yeah.
Because I may play by my rules, but if I can inspire somebody to live beyond their rules...
they'll become a better person, not just a better magician.
Keep asking questions, and everything's still possible.
Well, as I wrap this up then, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question then to you is, what is important to you? What do you live by? What is your magic word, your magic philosophy?
That the world wasn't shaped by its answers. It was shaped by its questions. And that next question could come from any of us.
Yeah.
So.
That could change the world.
It could change the world. It could change what's possible and what's not.
Yeah.
The Earth was the center of the universe until someone questioned it. The atom was the smallest particle until someone questioned that. Up until last year, there was no debate about the speed of light being constant. Until,
oh, that's true. Yeah.
Up until about 10 minutes ago, you thought interviewing a scientist magician was a great idea.
Now I begin to wonder.
The truth is, let the
listeners decide.
Our questions determine our answers.
Yeah.
And as long as we keep questioning,
mm-hmm.
the world can be changed. It's not until we give up that the world stands still. You know, the world stands still when we give up. And so that's why we have to embrace wonder, to see beyond any illusion of knowledge, especially in the age of information. Because we're starting to rule out things because we think we know the answer, because we can search it on the internet. But don't forget, we gave the internet its answers.
Yeah.
You can't ask it the questions that will change the world.
You know, I just finished a book, I've forgotten the author, about emergence and the theory of emergence, and like on the internet, let's say like Google, that it is something that is based upon users' feedback. In other words, the reason that certain things are at the top, because whenever you ask a question mm-hmm. or put something in, that is the most common answer that people click on. They may find it. For an example, that this philosophy of emergence would, came way back when, let's say in the 1600s, that there was some guy who, they were having a raffle trying to decide to win this cow, that you had to guess its weight. Nobody had the exact weight, but on all these pieces of paper, somebody gathered up all the papers, and the average of all of their guesses was within close. 2 pounds of the weight. Instead of 1,187, it was 1,185. The point is that no one may exactly know, but the answer
castle will emerge from all of your, what your guesses are, or it's like ants who are, you know, it looks like a pattern on television, just a bunch of static, but if you put like a piece of sugar at one end, before long they'll start following this, and eventually it will, they'll all line up and find that same piece of sugar. You
know? I agree with the idea of common ideas might lead to the right answer. One of the things I mentioned in the that TEDx talk that I was talking about is we should be very careful about a system that's designed to give us answers but not right answers. That we should be very careful about it, and this is just as a outsider looking in.
Yeah.
When was the last time a revolutionary idea started off popular? And our search engines are determined off of what's most the majority of people think.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that in Braveheart they said that the history is written by the winners.
Right. Yeah. But you also think about this. If the internet were around when we collectively thought the Earth was flat, you'd never be able to search the true shape of Earth via any search engine because everyone would have uploaded the Earth is flat. Right. And even when the page is wrong, because you click on it, you've reinforced the path to the next user.
That's correct.
So whether the next page is right or wrong, you've just reinforced spinning your wheels at least once.
That's true, but depending upon how many users that you're going to be having after the millions of people or whatever, that truth will emerge.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Yes. We've also never considered time as a factor in the internet, too. Like, a web page that's been there since the beginning will always come up first because it's had a longer head start than anything that emerges second.
There's a lot to that. That's true.
Yeah, and as long as we keep clicking on it, it'll keep being right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, especially when the internet values a 5-year-old's click just as much as a 50-year-old's.
Yeah.
So, I always like to think that it's just not, as long as we think of the internet as a library.
Yeah.
Assuming anyone remembers what a library is, by the way.
those buildings, yeah.
As long as you remember, the internet doesn't think. Mm-hmm. It never questions what it knows. It doesn't know how to wonder. As long as you remember that the internet is just a massive library on steroids.
Yeah.
That it's a passive technology. We are the active technology. As long as you remember that, you can see magic everywhere. There's always questions to be made.
Well, we can stand here.
Yeah, I got to go.
Like, I know you do. Okay, that's okay. That was Jason Latimer over here at the Magic Apple. And so for the Magic the Word podcast, this is Scotty out. Thanks, Jason. All right, still over here at the Magic Apple. I can't seem to get away because there's always somebody coming in I'd like to talk to. Now I have Jonathan Levitt. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm good.
You said you just went through the Panama Canal just last week.
I did.
And
I
so
did.
What was that like?
Well, one.
Had to go through each of the locks and all that
kind
of thing?
Yeah, well, first, I recommend you don't swim like I did.
Okay.
Because they really frown on that.
They frown on that, yeah.
And the toll isn't really worth it. it was so fascinating. It's an engineering marvel, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been through the Panama Canal. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was my first time, and it's been there for 100 years, and we realized, you know, it was built when there were no computers. And it's still working.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's still working. It's unbelievable.
Well, yeah, they had cut that land mass. I mean, it saved days and weeks, I guess, of travel. Passenger ships.
They said something that's, I forget the number now, it's like something like 16 days cut down if you had to go through around the tip of the continent.
You know, one time they were talking about making a canal through Florida also, and I think they got partway through, and then they kind of gave up, and the money kept going up and up.
Are you sure that they didn't just want to cut Florida off of the United States?
It's a whole peninsula.
Right.
Big island, not a part of Big Island of Florida.
And maybe it floats away.
Yeah. Be part of Cuba.
That's right. Now, apparently China is talking about making a canal through, I forget where now we're. But, yeah, I guess that's the thing to do these days.
Yeah. Okay. That's going to magic for just a minute. Okay. So, let's talk about magic and the movies, because you were in and were involved with Burt Wonderstone, and now you see me. Two completely different movies, one a comedy and one more serious drama kind of a thing. What was that like? And I mean, it's kind of probably like choosing your infant. Which one do you like better? You know, kind of a thing.
You know what? They were so different. You're right.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they were both really fun.
Yeah.
Burt Wonderstone, I was on for longer. I was on during the course of the production.
As a consultant? And
as a consultant.
Okay.
Jim Steinmeier was involved in consulting. He was on pre-production. He built a lot of what happened in the movie magically. And then he brought me in to work with the run of the production, to work with the actors, to teach the actors how to become magicians, how to do the work that we needed to do, how to be on set and implement some magic, and then continue to think about on the spot stuff that had to happen. And And that was great fun. I mean, it was interesting to work with the actors, interesting to see how they took to it, how involved they got in it, how or didn't get involved in it.
Yeah.
And then during the course of that production, which I was on for about 4 months, in the middle of it, there was 1 week where I wasn't needed, and it just so happened that that week I was asked to be part of Now You See Me, in New Orleans. So I went out to New Orleans. So I worked with that film for that week, working with mostly Jesse Eisenberg, Dave Franco, and Isla Fisher.
And teaching them magic?
Teaching them magic, teaching them how to become magicians, how to think like magicians, how to act like magicians.
How do you do that in such a short amount of time, in less than a week, with all three or four guys?
How to move like magicians. Well, yeah. I'll tell you how you do it. And then also to work with the magic team to develop some of the magic or come up with some ideas and concepts. And so I did that for the week, and then I came back to Burt Wonderstone. So it was interesting to see the difference between the two productions and the two different casts. To answer your question about how you get something like that done within a week, one, I come from an experience as an actor and a magician, so I understand how to speak the language.
Yes.
And two, these are very talented individuals. Extremely talented individuals. And Dave Franco and Jesse Eisenberg, I mean, all of them, they soaked it up. They wanted to learn more. Mm-hmm. They kept asking to do more. We worked for a week. This is in pre-production. So this is what we were doing. This is part of what we were doing. The job was to work on this stuff.
Right.
So it wasn't just an hour a day or a half hour a day. It was
intense.
It was intense. So we worked on it. We practiced. We kept going over it. They sucked it up, and they applied themselves, and they're good at this.
Yeah.
You know, to give you, you know, when I worked on The X-Files years ago now, it feels like
years
ago.
I remember when you were on that.
Yeah,
that was
right.
Way back when. That was a good series. I loved it. Yeah.
It was fun. Long time ago.
Yeah.
Feels like right now. But one of the first things I did before I worked on it as an actor.
Was that your first acting?
It was my first major acting.
Yeah.
Role.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I think
right.
I read that in Magic or someplace. That
yeah,
was
crazy.
Huge. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And before I moved to Los Angeles, I said, I really want to be on The X-Files. That was my goal. Hmm. And my first acting job was on The X-Files.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And in a way that I would never have dreamt of having it be. But the day before I came to work as an actor on the show, I was working as a consultant. And I had to teach David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson a trick or two.
Mm-hmm.
And David Duchovny, I went in, he had to make a coin vanish.
Mm-hmm.
I taught him four methods to make a coin vanish. And the fourth and hardest method was the Goshman pinch.
Okay, yep.
And he said, let's do that one.
Of course.
Right. And the next thing I knew, he was doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
they're quick studies.
They're quick studies. That's what they do. And so the combination of my experience, my background, my ability to speak the language and communicate that information, and their ability to soak it up and digest it and execute it, that combination allowed us to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. And so then you went back then to Burt Wonderstone and finished up with that production.
Correct.
Then as well. And so again, there were completely different, you know, kinds of things. In the end, was the one movie that you liked the finished product better than the others, or you would have done something a little bit different, or do you think that it was something that the director had edited out that you wish they would have left in? Bunch of questions there. But.
Yeah, there are a lot of questions. They're both interesting movies, and they take a different tact. I mean, the interesting thing is that Burt Wonderstone, even though it's a comedy and sort of an off the wall comedy, and at the end of the day, it's a love story.
True, I can see that. Yeah, yeah,
it's a love story.
Yeah.
And so it's not really about the magic; it's about the relationship,
correct?
And the arc of this hero,
yeah,
of this main character, Steve Carell.
Mm-hmm.
And but when you really evaluate it and you break it down, there's a lot of magic happening in Burt Wonderstone, and a lot of practical magic, a lot of visual magic, visual effect magic,
right.
But a lot of practical magic,
right?
That's actually being done, true manipulation. Within the movie. I'm also Steve Carell's hands for much of the movie.
Hmm.
So when you're seeing him do sleight of hand, sometimes it's him, but for the most part, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you'll even see his whole body, but they'll still be my hands.
Yeah.
So we're doing a lot of magic, a lot of manipulation, a lot of sleight of hand, more than you might expect from an off-the-wall comedy.
More so in that movie than it was in Now You See Me, because, like, the girl floating in the balloon, some other things, it's like, why did they do that?
And I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's right. When you break it down and you look at each element of magic, I think there's more magic going on in Burt Wonderstone.
Yeah, which is why that I personally like that better than the other, even though I understand that the Now You See Me made millions of dollars more than Burt Wonderstone. And they're talking about a sequel, possibly?
That's right.
Are you going to be working with that, or is there anything you could tip us on that?
Too early to say.
Okay. Very well said. Are there other projects that you're working on then now?
I have been...
Acting, consulting, anything? Or?
I've been working on developing shows mm-hmm. for television and film. And both in the scripted realm and in the unscripted reality realm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm working on now.
Reality realm. Because I was just talking with Jason Letterman, and he was talking about the Wizard Wars, you know.
Oh,
you're not involved with that, but that's a reality-based kind of a thing. So you've got something else you're working on.
Right. And the reality is that there's really only one project of that involves magic. The other projects don't involve magic.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Which do you prefer?
Magic or not magic?
Yeah.
Well, as I've often said, magic has often found its way into the different areas of my life as an entertainer, mm-hmm. whether it be acting, television hosting, or producing.
Mm-hmm.
And magic has often found its way into each of those categories. And I love that. That's a win for me.
Right.
If we can incorporate magic in, I love that.
Yeah.
But I also love to explore content that has nothing to do with magic. I just like good content,
sure.
interesting stories, fascinating people.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can either represent those people as an actor, or I can present those people or educate the audience about those people as a television host or present those people as a producer, that makes my life happy.
Yeah. I know that some people have to actually put magic on hold, like Steve Valentine couldn't, you know, to launch his career to be a successful actor, he had to kind of downplay being a magician. I guess likewise, Neil Patrick Harris now can talk about magic, but he probably couldn't for a long time then as well. Do you see that you kind of have to do that? I mean, is your goal to be an actor or to be behind the scene? Which do you prefer?
I like both, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, I enjoy both, and the reality is that I get where Steve was coming from with that, and I respect him for that, and I felt that way too,
mm-hmm.
For quite some time. It's a very difficult thing to separate. People in this business like to put you into a box.
True.
And, you know, he was very smart about how he managed his career in that respect, and
mm-hmm.
he's such a talented guy. That now to see him coming back into magic is really a lovely thing because he's so, so good, so interesting and so talented. For me, as much as I was going down that road of the separation, at the end of the day, I couldn't deny the fact that magic had such an impact on my career, on whatever I've done in my career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, and I have not achieved a level of a success that someone like Steve Valentine has.
Mm-hmm.
But my career is what it is, and we all, what we do is what we do, right?
Right.
And so I love being able to incorporate magic when I can, and when I don't incorporate magic, I don't.
Two last questions, but did you find yourself getting involved as a consultant and as an actor because that was a plan that you had? Did you happen to be at the right place at the right time? Did you have an agent? How did you kind of get to do, people might ask that question, you know, it's like, how do I get to be like Jonathan, you know?
Right. My business card says on it, never stop creating.
Okay.
I think that is, for me, that is the mission statement of my life and my career. Never stop creating.
And that was my second question. What is your magic word or your phrase? And that sounds like that's what it is.
It really is.
Yeah.
Whether you're, because in this business of entertainment as an actor or a producer or a host or a magician, it's very difficult to either make the career or to understand what that career is or to build it exactly how you want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's too many variables. So you can work towards any of them, and you should. But at the end of the day, for me, it's about never stop creating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Creating as an actor, creating as a magician, creating as a producer, creating content, developing content, creating magic tricks, creating videos for YouTube, creating whatever you can.
Correct.
To create,
mm-hmm.
right? Make something.
Exactly.
Just make it.
Right.
And if you keep doing that, then at the end of the day, I truly believe that these paths will converge
mm-hmm.
In some way. And for me, they have converged. In many ways, they've converged.
Is it just serendipity, or again, is a strategy where you had that plan that you wanted to do this by a certain date, or what?
I'd like to say that I had a solid plan, and I don't.
Okay.
I really, I did have one plan. My plan was to be on a sitcom within 6 months after moving to Los Angeles 18 mm-hmm. years ago.
From where were you?
I moved most immediately from Denver, Colorado.
Okay. Yeah, I lived there for a while.
Yeah, that's yeah. good.
I was a gourmet food editor for the Aurora Advocate Sentinel newspaper. I lived in Aurora. Way back then, ta-da, yeah, I was, I was, it was back in the years when actually Lyle Alzado was my next door neighbor. It was his rookie year with the Broncos way back when. So
amazing. I love Denver. I lived there for 4 years after college.
Yeah, me too.
And I loved it. But there wasn't really a plan, right? I said 6 months after I moved to Los Angeles, I'll be on a sitcom. That was my plan.
Yeah.
And past that, I had no idea what I was doing. Didn't know anything about the business, right? And so, it's about being ready when the opportunity mm-hmm. presents itself.
Right.
And then having some luck thrown in. And if you have all those things, then you can maybe move your career forward. And
right.
The X-Files was a big push for me.
Sure.
And that came about because I was lucky. It was available. But I was also ready as an actor and ready as a magician. I was exactly the right guy for that role at that time.
Right.
Right? And if those things hadn't happened, then my career, I don't know what my career would be. It would be in a different place. It would have taken me down a different road. But
right.
who knows? And you'll never know.
Right.
And I'm sure I've missed opportunities along the way that I wish I'd had as well. So you can't. You can never look back. You can only look forward, and you can never stop right. creating.
But you had to join the Screen Actors Guild and do a lot of things beforehand, so whenever those opportunities came that you were, yep, I got my card and I'm ready to go.
Right, but that's not a choice of joining the Screen Actors Guild. You can't just come out and join it.
You have to actually have a part?
You have to go through a process.
Okay.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And you either have a... And as a non-union actor, have a part that is union that the production company is able to tap Hartley you in specially and pay to have you part mm-hmm. of the union.
Okay.
Or you go through, at least at the time, I'm not sure of the rules today, but when I was doing it about 18 years ago, you had to be a union extra 3 times.
Okay.
But as a non-union extra, you can't be a union extra.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, it's a complicated process. So once you get in, though, once you find your way in, then you're part of it. But you can't just say, I'm going to be in the union.
Yeah, you just don't sign up.
Right. So that's the, you know, and I got lucky. How did I get in the union? I happened to be a union extra 3 times on the show with Jenna Elfman. Just now forgotten the show. But...
Yes.
Right.
And her husband was the guy who's on...
Criminal Minds,
right now.
And yes. So she, knowing her, she put me on the show 3 times as a union extra, and thank you very much, I was now in the union. So, I mean, I got lucky.
Yeah.
Right?
Did you have a speaking part?
No, I was an extra.
Just
in the background.
Just, okay.
Right?
So that counts.
It counts.
Okay.
Only if they intentionally give you a union voucher.
As opposed to showing up on a cattle car.
Right. And yeah. The only reason I got a union voucher was because... Jenna Elfman, the star of the show, said, give him a union voucher. I got lucky.
Yeah.
Right? So, but as I thought about, and I never did extra work after that, you know, mm-hmm. but I had my SAG card, and then I continued to study and get ready, and now the X-Files presents itself, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
So I was very lucky. But I thought about it years down the road. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, you know, I didn't get on that sitcom in 6 months. But then I realized, you know what? I was on a sitcom as a union extra 6 months to the day after I moved to Los Angeles on her show.
That counts.
And you know what? I'll take it.
That's good. Well, I appreciate your time. I know that you got things to do, and so do I. I've got to get back to the castle here. So you answered my next question. That was, what is your magic word? Because the name of my podcast is called Magic Word. And again, your philosophy is?
Never stop creating.
That's great. That was Jonathan Levitt. And for the MagicWordPodcast.com, this is Scotty out.